Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. This fall, there will be a new English 2020 course at MTSU, the first time it's ever been offered. It's called Gay and Lesbian, American Literature, Culture, and Identity. And the instructor is Professor Lee Casson, who got his bachelor's degree from MTSU, earned his master's at UT Chattanooga in English, also has a specialist in education degree from MTSU with a higher education administration focus. He's been on the faculty full-time since 1999, and he's just about to wrap up his doctorate in education at UT Chattanooga. And you created the course. Thanks for being with us today, Lee.
All right, it's good to be here.
What sorts of literature are you going to be looking at with that either have gay and lesbian characters or expressions of homosexuality?
When I was thinking about this course last fall, when I was developing it in order to be approved to be part of the curriculum at MTSU, I decided that I would create the course around the concept of out, because out is an important concept within the gay and lesbian community. So there are three major areas that this course is divided into, and the first is out of sight, out of mind. And this focuses on American literature pre-1970, which includes characters who are experiencing homophobia, internalized homophobia, the effects of heterosexism. And we're looking at Lillian Hellman's The Children's Hour. After that, we're doing Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and then moving to Truman Capote's Breakfast at Tiffany's. After that, we're moving into the second phase of the course, which is coming out, which is the other out that of the out that's
right.
Governing the class. And we're going to do a really groundbreaking novel, which came out in 1973 by Rita Mae Brown, called The Ruby Fruit Jungle, with the unforgettable character Molly Bolt, who's very unapologetic about her lesbianism. And, you know, it's a take-no-prisoners approach to life.
Right.
And then we're moving to a book which came out in 2000 called The World of Normal Boys, and I don't know how to pronounce the author's last name. K.M. Sonlein? I'm not sure.
Sendlein or Sonlein? S-O-E-H-N-L-E-I-N, yeah.
Which is an extraordinary book. It's one of those rare books that I read that I was compelled to read it. It's so fascinating. You know, if the price for not reading or for continuing to read was death, I would have read anyway. It's that good of a book. And after those two, we're moving to a Tony Award-winning play called Take Me Out by Richard Greenberg.
Which has actually been performed here at MTSU.
I think so.
With student actors, yes.
So those are the three that are going to make the coming out section. And then finally, the last component of the course, we're moving into Out Loud, Out Proud, living freely with who we are and, you know, being comfortable with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're doing three novels. One is Shield of Justice, which is a detective novel. It's a lesbian detective in this. And that's a really important subgenre that I've discovered within contemporary gay and lesbian literature is the detective novel. Mm-hmm. And we're also doing Liquor, which I think is an extraordinary novel by Poppy C. Bright, and it's a really wonderful characterization of two gay men who dream of owning their own restaurant in New Orleans. And then finally, we're concluding the semester with When You Were Me, which in a nutshell is kind of a modern-day retelling of Oscar Wilde's In the Closet classic, The Picture of Dorian Gray, where the main character, sells his soul to the devil in order to become young. And, of course, when he becomes young, he experiences all these troubles that come along with it within the gay community.
Right.
So there's three sections to the course, and we're doing 9 primary texts, so 3 for each section throughout the semester.
And on the syllabus, what will the students have to do in order to complete their assignments? Are we talking exams, multiple choice exams, or essays?
There's a lot of stuff.
What kind of homework are we talking about in addition to reading everything?
I have been working on the syllabus a lot during the last week.
I mean, you could have some really, you know, you could have class discussions that just go on and on and on and never have any grading.
I mean, there is going to be grading,
of course.
It has to be.
I mean, it's such a rich subject.
I think that this course really needs reflection, because I feel that these students are going to connect with this literature because it's going to speak to them in some way.
It almost requires a seminar type approach.
They're going to find themselves within the characters and within the actions of the stories. So I'm asking students to do a series of reflection papers where they take something from the novel and they kind of summarize it a little bit, do a little analysis, a little synthesis, and then tie it to themselves. So they're doing 7 reflection papers. Mm-hmm. They're doing a short midterm examination. They also have to participate in 2 presentations. One is a group presentation where they're going to look at the concept of out of sight, out of mind, that first section that I talked about just a few minutes ago. And then they're going to do an individual presentation at the end of the semester where they have to participate in some kind of contemporary positive gay and lesbian organization, maybe like the HRC, which is the Human Rights Campaign.
Or GLAAD.
Or GLAAD or something like that, or MTSU Lambda. So they're going to have to participate in that and then come back and give a short presentation. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the semester, everything that we've done is going to help them put together what I kind of call a scrapbook, where they're going to have to take each of those major sections that I had addressed earlier and identify the major components of those. You know, for example, heterosexism or homophobia or mm-hmm. something like that. And then give examples from the literature to explain those major components and also use information from their personal reflections to show how they feel about it or they have experienced those. So there's a lot of stuff that they're going to be doing over the semester.
Right.
A lot of talking, but there's going to be some grading, unfortunately. It always goes along with any class.
Yeah. I think you're going to be asking some folks in the class to maybe stretch beyond their comfort zones and explore ideas and things that they maybe even hadn't thought about before.
Well, I think that really depends upon the nature of the student. You know, there's gay and lesbian studies often is referred to as GLBT, for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered, and mm-hmm. oftentimes Q is added to that for questioning people.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have a variety of students within this class. Some may be very out and are very capable of discussing these issues mm-hmm. in class, in their personal reflections, in their presentations, and in their final projects. But I may have a couple of folks in there who are Q, who are questioning, and they may be a little bit more quiet mm-hmm. and not so willing to give information.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we'll kind of, you know, make them feel comfortable mm-hmm. and let them, you know, say what they feel as the mm-hmm. semester progresses.
What would you say to a heterosexual student who feels that he or she is accepting and not homophobic, but who wonders what he or she could get out of this particular course, who might have some kind of reservation?
I think that's a very great question. That I don't, you know, literature is often very fragmented in terms of its genres, the way that we teach it. And this course, for example, is something that's highly fragmented because it's gay and lesbian American literature, culture, and identity. But despite all of the genres and the fragmentation that we have, I think all of these genres address the human condition equally. You know, I don't think that it, you know, gay, straight, male, female, you know, whatever it happens to be, I think all of us experience those core emotions equally.
We all love, we all have fears, we
exactly.
all envy, we all everything.
So, you know, and for so many years, I think that gay and lesbian students have had to extract the human condition out of a heterosexual continuum within higher education, mm-hmm. so why not flip the tables and ask the heterosexual students to do the same thing with our literature?
Okay. Makes perfect sense. Why, when people teach African American history, mm-hmm. you know, say for example, the one thing that as they explore a wide variety of historical documents and books and great personages is the one thing they try to get across is that we are not a monolith. There's no segment of society, no ethnic group, no sexual orientation, no gender that is monolithic. There are diversities within diversities,
exactly,
because we're all individualistic. Is that something that you think people will see, your students will see through the expression of gay and lesbians in literature?
I hope so. That's something that I have addressed, or I've tried to address with the curriculum. And, you know, I'm kind of backtracking a little bit here. The second section of the course that I had put together, which was coming out, and I just mentioned the three texts that will form that primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're also going to do a number of personal experience stories called Does Your Mother Know?, which is a number of essays from African-American lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm trying to include other voices within our own group,
mm-hmm,
you know, because it's not, I mean, my problem is not the same as somebody else's problem. You know,
right.
We have to reach kind of an understanding, a synthesis of all of that.
Some of the works of literature that you mentioned will be in the third portion, the last portion, mm-hmm, of the semester, are books that I'd never heard of before, whereas the ones in the earlier part of the semester you mentioned are more in part of mainstream,
yeah,
American
literature.
Literature.
There's,
yeah,
something that's, you know, ingrained within the fabric of 20th century American literature. Yeah.
So is gay and lesbian literature, contemporary 21st century literature, still kind of a niche thing, or is still kind of underground insofar as the greater mainstream literature, plays, culture is concerned?
Actually, gay and lesbian literature has been around for a number of years. In the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, there was this huge, I wouldn't say that it was underground, but it wasn't mainstream. It,
mm-hmm,
was this huge, all these lesbian and gay pulp fiction novels.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rabidly read by gays and lesbians of the time, and they were also read by heterosexual folks who were perhaps curious, not that they were questioning their own sexuality,
mm-hmm,
but they were just curious about these folks.
Right.
The Stonewall riots, which happened in the late 1960s, this was in, I think it was July of 1969.
In New
really
York City, yeah.
Changed the course of gay and lesbian identity, culture, the way that they viewed themselves. And from this point on, gay literature started to become more mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are hundreds upon hundreds, thousands upon thousands of gay and lesbian stories that people can choose from now, but it's not something that's just come out in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
This has been around for 80, 90 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more obvious to us now than it was in the past.
Yeah, I think maybe some of the novels might be a little bit more obscure to the mainstream audience, but certainly Broadway and movies and television, mm-hmm, have expanded their, you know, vision of you know, including gay characters,
right,
as the main characters in these performances. So it's come a considerable way, but I don't think that people think about it as a continuum. I don't think they think about the history of it, because it's like this unexplored area, at least for you know, some people who happen not to be gay. It could really open people's eyes if they were exposed to some of these different types of writing styles, these different,
right,
types of plays. You know, it's like you're, you know, taking the lid off of something and all this sunlight is coming up at the same time.
You know, you had mentioned media here for just a second.
Yeah.
And this course is focusing upon literature, culture, and identity.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the text that I talked about earlier and some of that one supplementary text, what was called Does Your Mother Know?,
mm-hmm,
there are other texts that I'm using throughout the course. And when I say text, this means, of course, books, text, and it also refers to television and film as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be looking at a documentary, and this is within the first section, which is Out of Sight, Out of Mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Oscar-winning documentary that came out in the early 1990s, and I can't remember the actual date. It's 93, 94, 95, called The Celluloid Closet,
mm-hmm,
which looks at the de-gayification of Hollywood movies during the 40s and 50s. For example, the children's hour, which is often called Lillian Hellman's lesbian play, because you have these two characters who are, they're in an all-girls school, and there's this horrible rumor, which is given by the nasty character, one of the students there, Mary Tilford, that both of the headmistresses are lesbians. Mm-hmm. So when this was turned into a film in 1961-62, and it starred Shirley MacLaine and Audrey Hepburn, that gay angle was really played down. And I think it might be confusing to audiences. What's the problem here? You know, so
right.
That's kind of the de-gayification of one of the films from that time period.
Same thing with Cat on a Hot Tin
exactly.
Roof, where Maggie the cat's husband, Brick, is dealing with the death of his male football buddy. But the dialogue does not really indicate that Brick had feelings for Skipper that were more than just pals.
So he just drinks himself into oblivion and waits for, what does he call it, the click to happen, right?
Yeah.
And at the very end of that film, right, isn't there kind of a reversal or something as to where he's very happy with himself and he and Maggie are able to patch up their relationship?
Right.
Of course, that's not the way that things happen within the play.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Breakfast at Tiffany's had been de-gayified. There are so many differences between the novella and Blank Edwards' film version, which starred Audrey Hepburn in the early 1960s. Within the film, you have an unnamed narrator who's very detached from the action that's happening. And usually when you have a first-person narrator, you know a lot about this character.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not very willing to tell us himself, to tell the readers that he's gay, but yet there are certain things that are happening within the novel that we can pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
So when this was turned into a film in the early 1960s, the screenplay writers decided we're going to get rid of all the gayness out of this.
Right.
And so the unnamed narrator becomes Paul Varjak in the film version, and I think most people have seen it at one time or another. And he's a struggling writer, and he's being... he's kind of a kept man also, and I can't remember the new character's name. Is played by Patricia Neal. And, of course, throughout the film, he and Holly Golightly fall in love, and there's this, you know, this romantic exchange at the very end where they're standing in the rain and hugging each other with the cat and Moon River swelling in the background.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, all of them have been, we've taken the gay element out of those for mainstream America at the time.
It's not just a question of communicating something about homosexuality in a very nuanced kind of way. I mean, they just took a scrub brush and scrubbed the heck out of the out of whatever treatment that they were going to. Ruby Fruit, what makes Ruby Fruit Jungle a real breakthrough moment, especially? Can you talk a little bit more about that? It was written by Rita Mae Brown, as you said, who is a lesbian. And explain why that's kind of a tipping point.
Molly Bolt is a very, like I said, unapologetic character. Mm-hmm. She's a lesbian, and she's not going to let anybody hold her back, and she's going to get exactly what she wants from life.
Mm-hmm.
And we really hadn't encountered that, I don't think, up till that point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is somebody who is, you know, she's going to do what she wants to. You know, it's damn the consequences and, you know, damn what society says. I am who I am, and here I am, and I'm going forward with my decisions, and I'm going to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Are there ways in which gay and lesbian authors can express some of their same feelings through the heterosexual characters in their works as well as through gay and lesbian characters in their works?
That's a good question. You know, I'm going to kind of go back to what I said about the human condition. I think that any good writer should be able to give us insight into the human condition despite the sex of the character, despite the sexuality of the character, despite the race of the character.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best answer I can come up with to that question.
This is more of a sociological question or a psychological question than a literature question. Why are we so afraid of witnessing or plunking down our $10 or whatever it is at the movie theater or watching on TV truly obvious expressions of gay and lesbian feelings. Why are we uncomfortable watching two men kiss? Why are we uncomfortable watching two women kiss? I say we. Yeah. I'm talking about heterosexuals.
Folks in general. I mean, it doesn't shock me.
You know?
I mean, it's just like watching anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound confrontational or that I'm, with some kind of evil agenda with this, but I think that society, by and large, is predicated upon a belief of heterosexism, which means that heterosexuality is the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that kind of steps out of that is uncomfortable for folks, because that's what they're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they see as being real and true. And when they see something different, I think it might, in a way, make them uncomfortable with what they have at the time.
That's why I wonder, in more repressive times, I wonder if people in the arts who happen to be homosexual express themselves in works through heterosexual characters who were, say, larger than life, like maybe Auntie Mame, for example, or somebody like that. They didn't figure they could get away with writing a homosexual character into whatever they were working on due to the tenor of the time, so they made a heterosexual character through whom they could pass, through all their feelings and emotions, just like society was forcing them to do by making them stay in the closet.
You know, I'm thinking about something right now with what you were just saying, is that there's one criticism of gay literature, in gay films especially, is that the gay character always has to die at the end in order to solicit sympathy from the viewer. And, listeners are going to hear what I say in just a second and perhaps be appalled, but the film Brokeback Mountain?
Yeah, right.
I know what happens, and I've never seen this film because it feeds into that vein, and I don't want to see that.
Right.
You know, if you think about Boys Don't Cry, Hilary Swank won an Oscar for this. You have to kill the lesbian at the end in order to solicit sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of the film Milk, which came out recently with Sean Penn, won an Oscar for this role playing Harvey Milk.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end, he dies.
But that happened in real life, unfortunately.
It did happen in real life, unfortunately. Let's go back to one of the plays that I'm doing, The Children's Hour. One of the main characters, Martha, who finally comes out at the end of the play and says, you know what, I am a lesbian and I have been attracted to you.
Yeah.
And she steps off stage and she kills herself.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one thing that I find bothersome, because I hate to think that straight America has to find us sympathetic or worthy of concern if we're miserable.
Yeah.
And not all of us are miserable. We're quite happy with who we are.
Or only find you approachable or likable if you're in a comedy, like Will and Grace or The Birdcage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're doing The Birdcage.
And you're doing The Birdcage
with
Robin Williams and Nathan Lane.
One reason I think that's such a great, great film is that, it's built upon stereotypes, but yet you have totally opposite stereotypes, which seem to balance each other.
Mm-hmm.
You have a right-wing, very conservative Republican, Christian, and then you have this very liberal gay couple.
Right.
And what's so enjoyable about watching that film, at least to me, is that despite these huge ideological differences between the two families, they're actually the same.
Yeah.
They're very much the same. They look a little bit different. They behave a little differently. But yet, when it comes down to it, it's the exact same thing.
Right. Yeah. And the whole thing is a farce based on La Cage aux Folles. So everybody's playing it broadly. All of these Academy Award-winning actors are playing really broad comedy.
But nobody dies at the end of that.
No, nobody dies.
You feel good at the end of this, right?
Yeah, you do. You do feel good because the young couple get married and presumably go off and live happily ever after.
Everybody's happy at the end, and they've come to a meeting of the minds. Yeah.
Yeah. What you were talking about, being, the gay has to die at the end in order for the straight audience to find sympathy with them, it put me in mind of the concept of the noble Negro, whereas back in the day, Sidney Poitier had to play in many of his films and almost better than the white folks. I mean, you had to be three times as good as the white folks in order to be accepted just as a human being. Like in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, where he's super educated, super accomplished, and yet he's fallen in love with this ditzy white girl who has no brains.
In Raisin in the Sun, he's a little kind of shady and a little got a little evil streak to him in there. So that might be one that
he's
kind of falls
little,
out of the
little
thing.
Kind of conniving. But and also in the Defiant Ones, he's playing kind of a, you know, he's playing obviously a prisoner, but he's playing a prisoner chained to a white prisoner, and they're trying to make a point. But you know, in A Patch of Blue, he's being kind to the blind girl who doesn't know he's black and all this sort of thing, and it seems like it might be that way with gay and lesbian literature too, or the straight thinking about it.
I was reading an article recently, and it was one of the questions that I can't remember the guy's first name, it's Bronski, had posed was that there's this argument within gay literature and in gay text, we could talk in film or television, built around the question, is it good for the gays? And I think that's kind of what you're talking about here.
Gays, the blacks.
Is this good for us? Are people going to look at this film or this representation of us and say, oh, they're good people because they did good things? You know? And not all gay people are good. Some of them are evil, nasty people.
Right.
You know?
It's the reason the NAACP wanted Amos and Andy TV show taken off the air in the early 60s was because at that time that was the only depiction of blacks on television, and so it was easy to see for whites to see all blacks as lazy and conniving and this and that because you didn't see any blacks in any other kinds of roles. Has gay and lesbian American literature progressed to the point where there is great diversity to be seen? Like, you know, an actor wants to play sympathetic and non-sympathetic characters, wants to express the broadest kind of range humanly possible. Are the audiences for the literature willing to accept gays as criminals, gays as ministers, gays as married, gays as accountants, gays as whatever?
I hope so. I'm trying to think of some of the recent things that I have selected on here, and I'm thinking of When You Were Me, and of course this is a guy, the main character, ends up, you know, this kind of Faustian bargain that takes place. So he's much older and he wants to become much younger. Mm-hmm. You know, he does some bad things throughout this. And there's some bad characters in there. And there are gay characters also. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like to see a variety. You know, we're not all sweet little people. Some of us are, right? But, you know, we have ulterior motives. And, you know, we're just as devious as the other person at times.
That's what I was talking about, is diversity within diversity. Yeah. You know, not seeing
the sweet
people
little
as
gay.
A monolith.
Yeah, yeah. And look at me because I'm so poor and pitiful and good. Kind of, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, please don't beat me up on my way home from school or whatever. This is something that have you ever taught anything like this anywhere else in your educational experience?
No, I have not done this. And a few years ago, and this kind of, I guess, is backtracking about English 220 in general. Mm-hmm. So let me kind of explain some things about English curriculum at MTSU and TBR requirements for general education.
Yeah.
Students have to take, of course, English 1010 and English 1020, which are composition, expository writing, introduction to research. So once they complete these two courses, they have to take a sophomore level literature course in order to satisfy their requirements for general education.
Right.
They have the option of taking 2030, which is kind of a generic introduction to literature course, which is generally built around three dominant genres, which would be poetry, drama, and fiction. And fiction, of course, includes short stories, it includes novels and novellas. And student, or if they don't take 2030, they have the option of taking English 2020. And English 2020 is very similar to 2030, but yet each section of 2020 is focusing on a specific genre within literature. And right now, I think we have maybe 30, 35 different English 2020 courses. We have gay and American literature, culture, and identity. Gay and lesbian American literature, culture, and identity. There's Jewish American literature. There's another class called Monsters and Outcasts that appear within literature, sports and literature, environmental literature, women in literature. There are I'm trying to look at the list in my mind and I'm drawing a blank, but there are numerous different really specific genres that students can select if they want to.
Whatever you like to read, right. There's something there for you.
And these 2020 courses have become extremely important. And, you know, there are a lot of things that I don't like to read. You know, for example, I hate Victorian prose. Victorian novels, wonderful. Victorian prose, never want to read it again. Did it in graduate school, never again. So, you know, I think for some of us, especially if we know what we like to read, this is something that is important for students because mm-hmm. they can match a course with their interest, and I think that will contribute to their likelihood of doing better.
Instead of being forced to read something, you know, in high school, like, oh, we have to read Silas Marner, oh, please, yeah. You know, and you slog your way through Silas Marner.
Well, that's better than Middlemarch. I mean, Silas Marner is only about 150 pages. George Eliot's Middlemarch is what? 800-900 pages, so you know, it's the better of the two choices, right?
But anything that gets them hooked on reading is something they like to do rather than something they have to do.
Yeah.
It's got to be an English professor's dream.
You know, and I think that they want to do this. Students registered for fall classes roughly in the middle of April, mm-hmm. and I had received, I don't know, probably a dozen, 15 emails from students who enrolled in the course, and mm-hmm. they were so excited. What's the reading list? I want to start over the summer. I mean, I've never experienced this, and I've been teaching college-level English since the fall of 1993, so this is what? 18 years I've never encountered this.
Did you have a course like this when you were going for your bachelor's?
No.
Or your master's?
No. Actually, when I was doing my bachelor's degree, those sophomore literature course that I took was women in literature, so mm-hmm. there were
elements.
A few, but mm-hmm. certainly not like what we have today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is MTSU's first. Let me say this, and then I'll go back and clarify.
Okay.
First gay and lesbian course. This is not to say that these issues have not been explored in other classes.
Sure.
But I think this is the first one that's focused on it in its entirety.
So we're breaking new ground here.
I hope so. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that they're, you know, both of these courses filled up immediately.
Yeah.
You know, they were at a medium, they went to from 0 to 15 just like that.
So you've reached your limit on this.
Reached limit. And, you know, and of course enrollment will be increased a little bit over the coming months. Mm-hmm. They'll probably be increased to about 20. So I will have 40 students in both of these classes.
Is this going to be a permanent class that's going to be offered every semester?
Yes. I've already written down or asked to teach it next spring as well. So
that's great. So it won't be just a special topics class that's in the catalog that'll come out every now and then.
No.
It'll be maybe the summertime too? Or do you need some time off?
Probably not. Summer school has changed a lot in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
About the last 10 years when the TBR changed MTSU's requirements from 132 to 120 in order to graduate.
Credit hours, yeah.
That took away one of the literature requirements that students needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then also this lottery scholarship situation, which doesn't pay for summer school. So not as many students are going in the summer. So it's not going to be available in summer, but in fall and spring. Yeah.
When you were sitting down and devising the specifics for this course and determining what was going to be in it, what students were going to read, did some things come to you right away, or did you really have to sit down and ponder it and think about what you wanted in this course, what exactly works of literature you wanted in the course?
I had to think about my strengths to begin with. Mm-hmm. And you know, my focus is 20th century American literature. That doesn't mean that I don't have an awareness of other genres, mm-hmm. but that's where my energies reside, you know, my literary energies and interests.
All right.
So I thought, okay, I wanted to make sure that it's American literature, so that rules out British literature and, you know, colonial and other places. So then I started to think, how am I going to teach this? You know, I don't want to just throw texts to them. Is there some kind of chronological way that I can approach this? So that's what led into that out of sight, out of mind, coming out and out loud and out proud, because it's kind of it's a progression throughout 20th century American literature, but that very progression, I think, mimics what we do as gay men and lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. You know, we're trying to figure out who we are, and then we come out, and then we eventually are able to live out loud and out proud.
Mm-hmm.
And that also mimics the way I think that society deals with us. You know, they kind of put us out of sight, out of mind, then they listen to our coming out stories, and then they're more willing to accept us. So that's was kind of the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
It looks at the chronological progression of the texts. It also mimics what we experience psychologically as we go through our own understanding of ourselves, and also it mimics what society does with us. So that's kind of how I put this course together for a number of reasons.
Which is really what all good literature does for all kinds of subjects, right?
I would hope so, yes.
The course is called Gay and Lesbian, American Literature, Culture, and Identity, English 2020, being offered for the first time at MTSU in the fall of 2011, and the professor is Lee Kasson. Thanks for being with us today.
No, thank you. I've had a good time.
Me too. This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.